Hey, Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
To the Star Wars Film Festival, where the Lorehounds, your guides to a galaxy far, far away. I'm David.
I'm John, and this is our coverage of the 2002 film Star Wars Episode II, Attack of the Clones.
In this podcast, we're going to be discussing the movie's production, the plot, and impact on the Star Wars universe, followed by some listener feedback.
Be sure to stick around to the end of the podcast for programming notes about our podcasting schedule for the rest of July.
Real quick, we have a Patreon, and if you're interested in supporting us anyway, check us out at patreon.com/thelorehounds. We're just coming to the end of our one-year anniversary in July of 2023. We've prepared a really cool thank you gift that we're going to send out to anyone who's subscribed at the end of the month. Stick around to the end of the podcast. I'll have some more information about that.
We love to respond to your questions, thoughts, and theories on air, so send us feedback for the next episode.
You can send emails to starwars@thelorehounds.com or head to our website and either use the voicemail feature or the contact form. You can also post a message on our Discord server and we can include those comments as well in future shows. Links to all of that in the show notes below.
David, we're continuing through the Star Wars universe. I don't think we have to go too deep into Star Wars history as we've done that on the first film, on The Phantom Menace, which you can check out on our feed now. But I want to just give a quick 30 seconds on your Star Wars vibe.
I'm a child of 77. I was born a little while before that. But yeah, saw it live in the theaters. The first trilogy, the first set of three movies are my nostalgia as a kid. And without question, Rogue One and Andor are my favorite of all Star Wars properties. And I think, being a surface level fan, I haven't dug deep into the fandom, but as we are now taking on Star Wars as a main part of all of the podcasts that we do, I'm learning more and really absorbing all of this stuff and having a fun time getting into the extended Star Wars universe.
Cool.
Yeah. You?
I was born in the 90s, and so I was a prequel kid, though I probably saw the original trilogy before I saw any of the prequels. Mm. It's funny, my dad was really into the original trilogy. My grandpa was really into the prequels for some reason, so I got it from both sides. And I like to think I appreciate the prequels for what they are, and I leave them for what they're not. And so it'll be fun revisiting these as we...
Yes.
Work our way through some Ahsoka background and then work our way into the Ahsoka series as a main character from the Clone Wars who never shows up in any movie.
Yes, indeed.
Becomes the headline of her own show.
We should make a mention too with the Star Wars Film Festival idea was that our fans pelted us with lots of rotten fruit until we relented and we said, fine.
I don't think it was rotten. I think they sent us a fruit basket with a note.
Oh, was it that? Oh, okay. Maybe by the time it got to me. Yes, it was a nice request. But we're covering all of the major films. So that's all 9 main films. That's the 3 trilogies, plus Rogue One, plus Solo, right? And I think we might sneak in a Star Wars special or something around the Christmas holidays.
Yeah, we'll see what's going on. We'll vibe check it.
Right. But yeah, we're covering the main films just as part of our involved coverage in all of Star Wars. So this is our second podcast in the Film Fest.
Yep. And we are back in 22 BBY. But before we get into the main story, I think let's give our general impressions spoiler free on the movie.
Sure. I was surprised at how not bad this was.
Okay. You'd heard worse things than you saw.
Yes. And I have worse memories than I remember. I think there's a tendency to pile in on the prequels and give them some extra hate, let the hate flow through you, to really denigrate them and give them a hard time. And there's a little bit of criticism warranted in all three of the prequels. Yeah. But that said, if you're – and I made a conscious decision going into this film festival that I was going to really look at the movies critically. I was going to be open to what the stories were trying to tell me, to learn the deeper background. And I have to say that kind of change of attitude and change of point of view has been serving me well so far, two movies in. And while the first movie, I can't even remember the name.
The Phantom Menace.
Thank you. The Phantom Menace was super cringy in parts.
Mm-hmm. And the pacing was a mess in the first movie, which I think this movie, while it didn't get perfect, got a lot better than the first one.
A lot better. And then this movie is packed.
Yeah.
It has so much going on. There is a lot of adventure. There's a lot of action. They steer away from a lot of the cringy stuff. It's the romance cringe is there, but we get away from the Gungans and some of the Trade Federation stuff, even though there's some classic lines in a couple of places.
I think if you take out the romance subplot, it's a seven or eight movie.
Yeah. Ooh, I don't know if I go
romance,
that high.
It's more like a five or a six with the romance.
Ooh, yeah, you're really weighting that romance pretty heavy there. It's dragging.
It's pretty bad. It's pretty bad. It's some of the worst romance writing I've ever seen in my life. I'll be honest. George Lucas should never write any more romance ever.
Or he needs an editor, right? And he needs writers. And we've talked about that before. Yeah. So my overall impression is a lot better than my expectations, my memories. Like I weighted my memories so that it's worse than it really was.
Uh-huh.
So looking at it with a fresh view, I am not. Yeah, it's fine. It's not a great movie, but it's packed full of information. It's packed full of story building. It's packed full of plot stuff and everything. So yeah, I think it's a rich, fertile space for the Star Wars fandom.
And you really see where George was going with this, with mm-hmm. the politics of it. Right. And I think it's really fascinating to see this whole idea of endless war being a tool for people to maintain power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's even stronger within the Clone Wars animated series, but it really starts to take root here of this idea of the Jedi, these peacekeepers, losing their way by being drawn into pointless wars. This idea of, well, you might think that you're fighting for the good guys and they're fighting for the bad guys. Really, everyone's a victim of those at the top calling the shots.
Mm-hmm.
Really big, great ideas from George Lucas.
Right.
That aren't always satisfactorily executed.
Mm-hmm.
But they are there.
Yeah, agreed. They are there. And these, I think we don't have a rich canon to build from with the animated verse, the video games, which I don't play, so I can't speak to those really, but I'm just thinking of, all things canon. And then the development of the television shows. Now, hit or miss on the television shows, that set aside, we don't get to having television shows without having the prequels, without laying the foundational elements of this era of the Empire, the Senate, all of these things, without George having laid out his ideas in these first three movies. Good or bad, the movies may be, the story material within them really creates the space for us to have all of these extended stories.
Right. I always think that the original trilogy works better as a narrative structure as an adventure. Mm-hmm. But the prequels did a lot more to build out the Star Wars universe and
hugely
make it a bigger place.
Yeah.
And really did leave room even for post original trilogy things, you know, post Empire adventures like The Mandalorian, which is still dealing with Mandalore and still dealing with clones and with the, you know, the Jango Fett clones, you know, all these things that you don't realize, but they all come from the mind of George Lucas circa 2002.
Right. And they were lines in a script, you know, help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you know, you fought with my father, General Kenobi, you fought with my father in the Clone Wars. You know, as a kid in 77, and I think I said this on a Star on a previous podcast, whoa, Clone Wars? General, tell me more, right? You know, they're just these little lines, and they just create the space for really great stories. And he had to go back at some point and tell those stories, you know, get some of that idea, those ideas out of his head and onto celluloid, right?
Right. So, David, we've talked about our general impressions a little bit. I think that we need to talk about a few production points on the film before we get started.
Okay.
I've just put down a few things. I think we talked mostly about the inception of the prequels and the CGI and how Lucas was sort of playing with technological advancements in The Phantom Menace. So if you want to hear more about that, check that podcast out.
Mm-hmm.
But one technological advancement that just started in this movie is that this was one of the first few films released that was entirely shot on a digital camera, being shot on the Sony and Panavision collaboration, the HDW F900.
Interesting.
What an exciting time to be involved in digital film.
What an exciting title of a camera.
Yeah, you know, I've talked about being a trained audio engineer.
Yes.
Every audio engineer that I trained with lived through the 90s and early 2000s when digital was becoming a thing in audio. And they all say the same thing, which is that early digital sucked ass. Like, it was just terrible. It just sounded bad. It sounded really flat and lacking warmth. And it just, they just didn't know what to do with it. Mm-hmm. And now things have gotten a lot better, and that was 10 years ago, so even now it's even better. But I think you can see a little bit of that here with Lucas's film. I mean, it's not like it's a bad looking movie, but I think that there are certain parts where you go, huh.
Did you ever hear the I assume it was a myth, I never tried it, but you could take on CDs, you're supposed to take like a green highlighting pen and color the back of it, and that would add warmth
to the sound. That has to be a lie. There's no, you're not using, it's not like a record where like the physicality matters. It's just a file.
Right. But it was like the light, you know, it added,
no,
you know.
No, shut it down. Shut it down. Put your highlighters away, folks.
I would love to hear if somebody actually tried it ever.
Yeah, it might be psychosomatic if you listen to it.
Right.
Speaking of digital stuff, first movie with CGI Yoda.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, gosh, think about it. In the Phantom Menace, you had puppet Yoda still. He was talking. He didn't fight. And, you know, I was listening to A More Civilized Age a few months ago, and that's a podcast that does all Star Wars stuff, and it's a great podcast. They do more lore-based podcast Star Wars stuff, where they, I know a lot of them have been with the Star Wars franchise for like decades, and they were talking about how, you know, George Lucas must have written this line, and then Yoda fights, and that that just made it impossible for puppet Yoda to continue in this franchise.
Right.
And it's a shame, because I really love puppet Yoda, and I think Disney has sort of come full circle on that. You know, Grogu's a puppet. We had puppet Yoda in the sequel trilogy, but yeah, they went full CGI for this Yoda.
You know, I didn't even blink an eye, but maybe that's because I'm watching so much animated right now to try to catch up for Ahsoka, and I've just sort of lost the differentiation between the practical and the digital. So I didn't even really consider that it was an all digital Yoda.
This was the first time we had all digital Yoda.
Interesting. Okay.
Crazy times. I wanted to add, the infamous droid factory sequence was filmed during reshoots, because George Lucas watched the cut of the movie and said, we need a faster pace in this section of the film.
Okay.
So he added that.
Wow.
And that is unfortunate.
It really is a very video gamey. Oh, what was the name of the, was it Dragon's Lair, Dragon's Quest? There was a video game that came out that was it was the first Laserdisc one, and you were this knight and you were going into this sort of Dragon's Dare thing, and you had to, at certain times you had to move your joystick to duck the swinging blade or to,
yeah, you know, jump out of the way. Like the cartoon one?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
And so whenever I see this scene of the factory, I just think of that.
Yeah. It's not good. It's not good. I think that's one of the least favorite parts of the movie for me. And I think most of the people who watch it just drags out way too long. But
well, and it adds to that. Like I said earlier, this movie is just packed with stuff and
yeah,
it didn't need an extra action sequence.
I don't need to know how the droids are made.
Ridiculous. I'm fine. You know, we could see a little bit, but yeah, this one went on and on and on. And then the silly stuff with C-3PO getting the head and the body changed. It's interesting because we're watching Foundation right now while we're covering this, and there's a bunch of humor in that show, but none of it is ridiculous humor. It's all situational humor that's appropriate to the story and to the characters and what's going on, where this is just stupid stuff. In the original 77 movie, when we saw C-3PO and R2-D2 crossing the hallway and sort of missing all the laser bolts.
Yeah.
It wasn't, it's played for a laugh, but it's not ridiculous.
Right.
There is a seriousness to it, and there's a humor to it, or, you know, and a lot of stuff with Han Solo being, you know, when a tool falls on his head or, you know, whatnot, a box of tools falls on his head or whatever. Okay. There's a little bit of a laugh there, but it's always wrapped around serious things and things that are in line with the story. It's not, oh, hey, we need a stupid humorous moment, right, so let's throw this ridiculousness in.
Well, let's save it for the scene. For now, just a couple more points. I just want an honorable mention for Hayden Christensen, cast as Anakin for this movie. He was not in the last one because we had baby Anakin in that one. But here he is, Hayden Christensen in all his glory. I think he's become a fan favorite of the Star Wars franchise, although it was poorly received at that time.
Right.
One last point I had was that Lucas actually did bring on a second writer for this. It was not just Lucas for this, which I didn't realize. He brought on Jonathan Hales, who worked on the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles. And he worked on later drafts of the movie because George Lucas saw the reception to The Phantom Menace and said, oh, God, I need help.
Right.
And it's a good thing he asked. I mean, I don't know how much of Jonathan Hale's work made it into this final copy, but it does seem like the movie is better paced for sure than
yes,
The Phantom Menace.
That is true.
And I think the highs of this movie are better than the highs of The Phantom Menace.
Yes, I would agree.
The lows are at least as low as The Phantom Menace.
I felt that the lows were shorter and fewer between, so it didn't drag. There's definitely a better pacing to this movie overall. Agreed.
Right. Okay. Well, David, any other thoughts on this movie before we head into our summary?
No, I think we can get into it a little bit more when we get into the summary breakdown.
Sounds good. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, let's hop in to Attack of the Clones.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And we're back. David, it's time to talk about Attack of the Clones.
Indeed.
I've broken this up into a 5-part summary by major story arc. So let's get started on the first one. And we will discuss each one after I read it. In 22 BBY, 10 years after The Phantom Menace, a teenage Anakin Skywalker is apprenticed to Jedi Knight Obi-Wan Kenobi. His crush, Padme Amidala, has given up queenhood to become the senator of Naboo. After traveling to Coruscant to vote on whether to create an army for the Jedi to use to fight the new threat of the Separatists, Padme survives two assassination attempts. Anakin is then tasked to escort Padme back to Naboo, where the two go from childhood friends to young loves through a very awkward courtship.
Okay, this is you.
Let's get it out of the way.
Yeah, you put the least with the hardest part of the stuff to deal with right up front. Yeah. So,
but I figured let's get it out of the way.
Yeah, that makes sense. This was just difficult, just awkward.
Anakin, I could die.
Unfortunate. I don't know. I don't want to. I actually kind of almost want to just bypass it all.
we can bypass the romance. Why don't we do this? The romance was bad.
Yeah,
the romance was bad. It was very cringy. It was a soap opera, and I wish it were not in there because otherwise the movie's pretty good.
Yeah, I think we can. The core motivation is this idea that Anakin's relationship with women is got problems, and that
it
sort
sure
of
does.
Leads to a lot of problems for the galaxy. In fact,
right.
If he had only had a different relationship with the women in his life, maybe things would end up differently. But yeah, obviously with his mother and then with his intense, I don't want to call it lust. It's not puppy love.
Obsession.
Obsession. Unhealthy obsession.
His crush. I've been calling
his
it crush. A crush.
Yeah. It certainly crushed a lot of people.
It sure did. Crush. The whole galaxy.
That's the point, is I think that there's this weakness and instability caused by love. I don't know. Is that what Lucas is saying? Is it loss? Is it hurt? Is it
mixture of it all, right?
Yeah. He loses his mother. Thwarted expectations.
He loses his mother. He sort of puts it's a little weird. It's a little Oedipus-y, but I think he puts a lot of that like maternal love into Padme as well.
Totally. Yep. Yep.
And the fact of losing his mother at a young age, but old enough where he could remember her, which is what the Jedi were worried about.
Right.
And then having Padme, you know, having Padme be held away from him, let's say, because he's not allowed to court her because he's a Jedi. I think it all just creates this toxic self-loathing and feeling of apartness for Anakin.
And the Emperor very quickly sees that weakness, seizes
Chancellor.
On it. Chancellor, sorry, yes.
Chancellor Palpatine.
Very good. And starts to use it and manipulate it and actually recognizes that this young doped up on midichlorians youngster, who we get a similar storyline with Ezra in some ways, right? There's some parallels there in Rebels, right?
Okay.
Where, you know, you have a young one who's very powerful, and yeah, as they're trying to struggle and grow, as they're struggling through their growth, the dark side offers easy ramps to power. And
right,
the ability to get what you want quicker and faster and be right, more effective without doing a lot of the extra work.
It's just like Jedi Temple Challenge, which is the game show that Ahmed Best hosted.
Right.
As Kelleran, the Jedi who... Yeah, Kelleran Beck, the Jedi who would... And so there was a mechanic in the game show where Darth Maul would pop up every now and then. And it was the actual voice of Darth Maul, who would, over the loudspeakers, be like, ha, 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 would you like to come into the dark side? You get a shortcut.
Right. Oh, there you go.
But perfect. It would bite you later if you took it. That was the mechanic in the game. I thought that was kind of a fun mechanic they put into that game show. But it's true. That's in line with the Star Wars universe.
Right. And then this whole idea of attachments, love, pain, fear, you know, to the dark side. And, I mean, I'm sorry to bring up Rebels again. I was just watching one of the episodes where I'm trying to not to say too much. Anyway, Ezra's going through some stuff and he's starting to use the power of the dark side. And, and he's counseled to say, you know, use it, fuel it, you know, let it fuel you. And in that moment when he does let it fuel him, he really accelerates with his ability to attack and, you know, fight in these lightsaber duels and stuff like that. So, this idea that this young, doped up, very naturally talented Anakin, the dark side is would totally be attractive to him. And
the dark side
grievance.
Was made for teenagers.
Exactly. It really was. And he's full of grievance around his mother and around Padme. And even to the point that he is so upset that Padme thinks that he's just a little one. You know, he's just a little kid. She doesn't even remember me. When all along she's been totally in love with him the whole time. Right. So he's using
this
pretense.
Was she? That's a good question. Was she in love with him the whole time? Because I don't think so. I think up until the middle of the movie, she sees him as a child because she knew him as a child, little Annie. Right. And, you know, she does call him Annie basically to the end.
Yes.
So
painful.
Kind of weird.
So, yeah. Does he woo her? But does he woo her just through brute force attack? Right. He's just constantly at her.
Right.
What was the, you know, the riding the beasts and then like he gets flipped over and she's worried that he gets crushed and she runs to him. Oh boy. Yeah.
Right.
That was tough.
Right.
But you know, even the romancing of her. So let's assume that she's open to his advances and even the attempts at romance that he makes are just ham-fisted and awkward. And I blame the writing for that.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't want to blame Hayden Christensen for this.
No.
He did what George Lucas asked him to do.
Exactly.
George Lucas reportedly wanted a very straight, emotionless performance from both of them because he wanted it to be, I think he liked the soap opera vibe. He wanted it to be like this very straightforward drama, like because he wanted it to showcase the sort of space opera-ness of it, right? He didn't want it to be an action movie between them when it came to the romance.
Yeah, yeah, interesting. I just don't understand some of these choices that
he's
made.
He's got some weird vibes, George Lucas.
Yeah,
yeah.
Well,
don't want to buy romance.
He's famously quoted as saying these are tone poems. It's like, okay, that's like a really bad excuse after the fact. You know, this you packed these with action, with lore, you know, everything from midichlorians to how a lowly senator becomes chancellor and, you know, ultimately emperor. Yeah. And you have clones and you have, I mean, you packed a lot of stuff in here. So these aren't just simply tone poems. So, you know.
So now that we've gotten that out of our system, the whole setup as a spy drama, as this noir film.
Yeah.
What'd you think about that?
It was interesting because while Anakin is off trying to find young love, we have Obi-Wan out on this cloning, you know, to discover what's going on with the cloning stuff.
Right.
We also have the whole thing about the assassination attempts and then the sort of chase through the city.
Right.
So sort of a
I was going for more CSI. Of that since we're getting into the Obi-Wan stuff still, but this he's crashing the car, he's jumping up and down, he's losing his lightsaber. Anakin's a wild card. We've learned he's crazy.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan's just trying to pick up the pieces. He's trying to solve mysteries. It's a very big tonal shift from The Phantom Menace, especially because I feel like this is the movie that most focuses on Coruscant and the movie that most feels like an urban Star Wars movie.
Is this really when we get our first forays onto Coruscant? I think in the movies, this is really where we start to see.
We were on Coruscant in The Phantom Menace, but only really in the Senate Pavilion.
Right.
And that's not Coruscant. That's not the city of you know, the city planet. I think this is the second closest look we've ever gotten at Coruscant after The Mandalorian, when we were in there for a couple episodes.
This whole chase scene really gave me Fifth Element vibes, which obviously came after the fact. I guess if we want to look back at it, then it's this idea that you have a planet that is kilometers deep, stacked with civilization. That's a really cool concept. And
thousands of levels.
Yeah. And that where have we seen that in film or television prior? I can't think of any references. That doesn't mean they're obviously not out there.
Right.
But
I can think of a show recently that's a little more like that, but
sure. Yeah. Yeah. But that's actually, you know, so again, here, diamonds in the rough, you know, panning for gold here. There's a lot of great concept going on and a lot of great lore building. The whole, are we actually starting to talk about the Anakin Obi-Wan stuff yet? Or are we?
Yeah, let's go into the next section and talk about that.
Yeah.
After the assassination attempts on Padme, Obi-Wan is sent to investigate. He follows a trail of clues to discover a planet called Kamino, which has been erased from the Jedi records. He meets with Kaminoan scientists who tell him that Jedi Master Sifo Dyas had ordered the creation of a clone army. He sees the army and meets their template, a bounty hunter named Jango Fett. He also meets Jango's son, an unaltered clone named Boba. When Obi-Wan realizes that Jango was the one trying to assassinate Padme, the two face off, leading to Jango's escape with a tracking beacon from Obi-Wan.
So a lot of this was really interesting. This is new ground. This was pretty straightforward. It's Obi-Wan after dark, the Detective Obi-Wan doing his thing. I felt he was a little clueless at times. He could have played on a little bit more when he was talking to the Kaminoans. You know, oh, great job. Yes, let's go. And maybe the direction and the script writing was to leave him a little bit more obtuse.
I liked how subtle it was, how they sort of showed how he was uneasy about it and he didn't want to lie to them as a Jedi, although, you know, Jedi mind tricks, whatever.
Okay.
But also he wanted to know more, so he's going along with it, just sort of being there. I think Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan is probably the best part of the prequels, in my opinion. And I just love spending time with him.
I didn't love his beard, though.
No.
It looked pretty bad.
Do you prefer his Revenge of the Sith beard?
I think so. I think in this one, it looked a little, I'm trying to remember now, but I just remember his face not, it was just a little off for me. But all whatever, right, that's enough. Just me, right? You know, don't write in.
Fair enough.
Save it. But the Kaminoan stuff was all very cool. Great lore building. Gives us a lot of holy smokes. There are plots within plots here that have obviously been running for quite a long time. The fact that the Jedi Council is just blind to this is incredible. It's gobsmacking that Obi-Wan is stumbling into this. I love how the Kaminoans are like, oh, cool, a Jedi's here. Great. You know,
right. They're like, yeah, we're ready.
Yeah.
Your order is just about ready. You've come to the second drive-thru window.
It's awesome. this idea, well, obviously clones become such a vital part of our current era of the Star Wars stuff, with especially in the animated verse. So it's cool to see this, this world and to meet the Kaminoans, you know, who are very different. I really didn't have any issues with this section of the movie.
Right. Do you know that they fully explain Sifo Dyas in the Clone Wars cartoon?
Oh, okay. Maybe I didn't get to that season yet. Because there's 7 seasons of the Clone Wars?
Yeah, there's 7 seasons of it. I don't even remember where they explain it, but...
Right, and I'm trying to... I'm sort of pedaling the metal on Rebels right now, so...
Yeah, Rebels is more important for Ahsoka, so definitely keep going on that. If you don't want the Clone Wars spoilers, skip ahead a couple of minutes, but I'll just briefly say that Sifo Dyas was a real Jedi. This was actually Sifo Dyas who went to the Kaminoans. It was not Count Dooku. Many people believe it was Count Dooku disguised, but it was not. We've confirmed in the Clone Wars. However, Dooku made sure, and Tyranus is what he called himself. That's his Sidious name. You know, that's his Sith name. So Darth Tyranus makes sure that Sifo Dyas dies above the Obadiah moon. And they come across, I think, his assistant, I want to say. Sifo Dyas' assistant in the Clone Wars. And they find out that something weird happened with Sifo Dyas. And turns out that basically Tyranus, which is Dooku, ended up being the main contact for the Kaminoans for a long time. And so that's how they kept their foot in. That's how Sidious and Tyranus kept abreast of what was happening with the Kaminoans and the clones. And that's how they got the chip in. And actually, Sifo Dyas was part of why there was a chip in the clones. He actually was convinced that to prevent them from becoming too aggressive, they should have an inhibitor chip in.
Interesting.
But then Sidious had it programmed for Order 66.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the deal with Sifo Dyas. We've learned the conspiracy theories are over. Sifo Dyas was a real guy. He just died before he could see the creation of the clone army.
Okay. Well, and a pretty visionary thing to create a clone army.
Right. Right. I think he just heard that somebody could do it. Mm-hmm. So he was exploring options and he was like, wow, this is great. I'll take it.
And it becomes a major part of our Star Wars storylines.
Right. But he went rogue. The Jedi Council did not authorize him to do this.
No, but then
he was
just
a super paranoid Jedi.
But then the Jedi ended up using them. And
well, because it was
robot army to fight.
Yeah. This is the best part, honestly, of the prequel politics, which is Sidious Palpatine knows to get the Jedi to become warriors, he has to fabricate a war and he has to make it too big for the Jedi to handle so that they have to create an army, making them into generals, making them the scapegoats for the war when it will inevitably drag on and go bad wrong. And become against public opinion. So that when he has to say the Jedi tried to overtake the Senate, it's believable.
Talk about long range plotting here and real fifth dimensional chess type stuff here. It's pretty wild.
Yeah.
What Palpatine gets up to. And then all inside of that, he's cloning himself. So spoilers, so that he's immortal, you know, he sort of creates a pathway to immortality for himself.
I really wonder how Lucas would have felt about that. I don't think he's revealed it because he probably has something in his contract. Like, you can't comment negatively on Star Wars products or whatever.
Yeah. And it wouldn't be great. It wouldn't. Yeah.
It'd be tacky. Yeah. 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 Yeah, but,
hey, if you ever meet him in a bar buy him some shots,
Georgie.
You know, find out.
Yeah. George, I love the Anakin Padme romance. Tell me more. Other points of this, Jango Fett. So I know you're a big Boba Fett fan. He was a cool guy of your childhood.
Yeah. He has this very small, yet he has his visage, his legendary status far outweighs his screen time. Mm-hmm. You see him for a moment on the bridge when Vader is ordering up some bounty hunters to go looking, right?
Yeah.
So you see this one dude, and then he dies one of the most ignoble deaths. Right? You know, his rocket, you know, and he gets eaten by the Sarlacc. But that's all. You know, we hardly had anything. Well, obviously in Empire, when he takes Solo back, so his screen time is minimal. Yet his visage, his look, this helmet, this jetpack, this Mandalorian armor, it was just cool. It broke the top off the rule of cool meter, right? It's like one of those thermometers exploding at the top. And so he was just a legend in our minds from the original movies, but we didn't know squat about him.
So did you like that he was given an origin story here?
I didn't not like it.
Okay.
How about that? It didn't bother me. Okay. Everybody's got to have an origin.
That's why I ask.
Yeah,
some people
yeah.
say he didn't need it. Leave him alone. I'm good with it. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm not upset by it. It's fine.
I guess the biggest criticism with it, and I take this criticism well, I think it's a valid criticism, is the more connections you make between characters from the different parts of this world, the smaller this galaxy feels. And you want it to feel bigger, yeah, not smaller.
Right.
So I guess if the argument goes, if you're going to make the clones be from Boba Fett's dad and Boba Fett be a clone too, then, and Obi-Wan had beef with him and Mace Windu has beef with him, then it just becomes a whole thing of everyone's cousin.
But it would be fine, I think, if we didn't have the stupid stuff like C-3PO and R2-D2 going back all the way to,
yeah, that's probably the worst case. That's probably the worst case of it.
Just don't do that. You know, bring him in somewhere else. It's fine. Some interconnectivity is fine. I'm good with that. But it's, you know, when we were talking about the Apple TV show Foundation right now, trying to adapt that series of books is really hard because it jumps millennia at a time.
Right.
Having connectivity through that time is helpful. But we're not dealing with that scale in this series of stories.
Right.
So yeah, when everybody's your uncle's brother's college roommate's dog's groomer.
All right, Spaceballs.
It just gets exhausting.
You know? Are we going to cover Spaceballs? I feel like we should add that.
We kind of should at this point.
Yeah, I feel like we've referenced it like 10 times now in our podcast.
Maybe that'll be like in April or something, like that, for an April Fool's thing or something.
That'd be fun.
Yeah.
That'd be fun.
Because if we're going to do the holiday special in
we're
December,
extending our time, huh?
That could
and
be.
And we're at one fun. Solo. So we got time. We got time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right, let's move on. When Anakin dreams about his mother's suffering, the two go to Tatooine. That's Padme and Anakin, where they find out that Shmi, his mother, married a man named Lars, had children, and was freed before she was kidnapped by the Tusken Raiders. Finding his mother dying in the Tusken camp, he murders not just the men, but the women and the children, too. He confesses his crimes to Padme, who gives him reassurance. When they learn of Obi-Wan's distress on Geonosis, they travel there. The line. Let's just go with it. Not just the men, but the women and the children too.
So going on the theory that Padme had kind of forgotten and let go her affection for little Annie, is this the moment when she falls in love with him, when he becomes a genocidal murderer?
Great question. No, I think when they're on the, I think if you're going to play by Georgia's rules, that happens when they're on the field on Naboo.
Okay.
That's their little turning point moment, is when she like admits that she has feelings for him and that she, oh, I could die, Anakin. What is that line?
Right.
But anyway, so that's where the turning point happens, I think. This, honestly, I think Natalie Portman played her pretty well because I saw worry in her eyes. You know, I saw this, oh, who are you? You were able to just kill a whole village.
Right. And there's, yeah, that's just, I don't know. It's genocide. It's mass murder. And I don't know how else to to deal with it. And then they play up the whole Western frontier town, you know, the cowboys and Indians sort of trope, as with Tusken Raiders being these savage wastelands people. And then they spend a whole 2-3 episodes of Book of Boba Fett rehabilitating and you know, course correcting for
that.
Yeah,
it makes
that,
it way worse, honestly.
Yeah.
Makes this whole genocide way worse. Not that genocide is ever good, but it makes it even worse when you're like, oh, they are a complete culture. This is not, you know, this is not a subhuman species. This is on the level of humans.
Yeah.
As far as sentience and empathy and whatnot. They live a rough life, but that doesn't mean that that you shouldn't have compassion for them.
So, yeah, it's just, again, a strange a strange element to put into the story. I mean, I get the fact that we want to get Anakin moving into darker and darker, you know, moving more into the shadow. So, yeah, I guess you need something. But then, you know, to bring it back to the Tatooine and the Sand People, and just like we were talking about before, and then having Beru and his, you know, or Owen and his girlfriend, my girlfriend, Owen, just all of this just vampirism of 77 gets exhausting for me.
I get you.
The same old stuff over, just pulling it out. It doesn't add, when you look at something like Coruscant, which is great, that's a very cool, Kamino, right?
New ideas,
moving forward. And then you just throw us right back into, you know, Tatooine and Beru and Owen.
I'm going to push back on this one a little bit. I'm going to say there is a mystery of how does Luke end up on Tatooine? What's his relationship with Uncle Lar or Uncle Owen and whatnot? And I think that we did not spend a ton of time on Tatooine in this movie. I think we spent an appropriate time on Tatooine.
Fair enough.
And I liked it. I liked the sequence other than the stupid lines. I think that this was showing the rage of Anakin come through, showing him tap into the dark side a little bit, showing him give in to his anger, and really foreshadows how dark he can get and how grief and his attachments, which is what the Jedi warned about,
right? Yeah,
are pushing him towards the dark side.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I will let go of some of my hate.
I just think. Look, if we got to Revenge of the Sith and he had never shown dark side tendencies before, would have been weird.
It would have been out of the blue a little bit. Yeah.
So I am glad that he toyed with the dark side a little bit here. He does so in the Clone Wars too. The Clone Wars does a good job of fleshing that out, of him just sort of being pushed to the edge at certain points. Watch the Mortis arc if you want a crazy Clone Wars story about Anakin.
Okay.
That is where they're on a planet that is the Force, and it's very strange, and some people hate it and some people love it. I'm one of the people who love it. So
I'll get there eventually, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I totally agree though that we do need an inciting incident for Anakin to really get into his dark side. Cuz
we didn't see that in The Phantom Menace. He was too little. He was not tapping into the dark side. We just saw a sweet little boy. Now he's a teenager, he's angsty.
He's making
choices.
But angst
isn't enough. We got to get him pushed over the edge a little bit.
Right.
Cuz this guy's going to be Darth Vader. He's going to be Darth freaking Vader. How does he get there? He needs a roadmap.
Mhm. Yeah. Fair enough.
All right, let's move on. Obi-Wan follows the tracking beacon to Geonosis, only to be captured by Count Dooku, who was meeting with the Trade Federation to discuss the creation of a droid army and ordered the assassination of Padme. Dooku tells Obi-Wan that there is a greater threat than him, a Sith Lord named Darth Sidious, who controls the Republic. In denial, Obi-Wan refuses to help Dooku defeat Sidious. I gave this its own, you know, point, because I just love the scene where Dooku tells Obi-Wan the entire plot, the entire issue.
Yes. Yeah.
He reveals to him everything. There's a Sith Lord. He's Darth Sidious. That's his real name. There's a Sith Lord named Darth Sidious. He's controlling the Senate. He controls the Republic. You got to take a look at this. This is going to be a big issue. You and I can bring him down. Now, that offer, I think, is be my apprentice, my Sith apprentice,
and help me
bring him down. This is not let's go team up, be Jedi heroes and bring him down. So I don't blame Obi-Wan for refusing it. I do blame Obi-Wan for not looking deeper into this.
Yeah, I think there are plenty of places where the Jedi Council, the Jedi Knights are blind, sort of stumbling around, ignorant of the things before them. I don't want to use blind, but I want to say unawares of what's right in front of their faces.
Yeah.
And when they're presented with evidence, I don't know. Is Lucas saying, hey, these plots and machinations are so devious and so deep that the Jedi can't see them, that the Sith did such a good job at hiding them. Maybe that's what he's trying to say. Because otherwise the Jedi just look foolish.
This success of Palpatine, we all know what happens. We all know that the Empire becomes a thing.
Right.
The success of Palpatine is really the culmination of thousands of years of the rule of two. Mm-hmm. Thousands of years of working in secret, orchestrating power behind the scenes, and finally waiting until the time is right to make their move. And he was wildly successful. He nearly wiped out the Jedi.
Yeah. Very effective.
Yeah.
Some say that power is the rate at which you can affect the change that you want. He's very powerful because he's moving whole societies, whole civilizations, whole institutions.
Right.
And like clockwork, he has them until some, random farm boy from desert planet who's got a bunch of midichlorians, brings balance. Right.
Right. So, yeah.
Well, no, that's his father. I'm sorry, the son of that guy.
Right.
So is this the first time that we're seeing Dooku on screen?
I believe so. And what'd you think about Christopher Lee? He's coming in. That's a big name to pull in for Dooku.
Yeah, a big actor, a big name, a big character. It's a lot. It's when you consider how much else is packed into this movie. Clones, genocide, city planets. It gets really intense. And I really like the Dooku character. I like Christopher Lee. He's great at playing. Is he a good guy or is he a bad guy? I don't know.
Right.
Saruman, really good.
Do you know the story of Christopher Lee explaining to Peter Jackson what noise a man makes when he's stabbed?
No, I can't.
So Christopher
say that
Lee
do.
Was like, I forgot the name of the British version of the CIA, but basically, like, he was in clandestine operations.
Okay.
And Peter Jackson said,
MI6, I think, is the foreign intelligence.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So Peter Jackson goes, okay, so Saruman's going to get stabbed in the back now. So he's going to go, oh. And he Christopher Lee goes, no. When you stab a man in the back, he loses all the air in him. And he goes, he tells him exactly what sound a man makes when he's stabbed in the chest.
Well,
why does he know that? Know that? So he's terrifying in real life. I mean, he's passed away now, and what a shame, because he's what a great actor. But yeah, he's the real deal. So when he's giving these speeches, I believe him.
Right.
I believe how terrifying he is.
Right. And this, I wanted to, this thing that I wanted to go back to really quick too, that was in my mind, was the idea of the Sith, and there are only two.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Palpatine, and he's got some other. We've got Dooku, we've got Maul, mm-hmm. We've got Anakin, and even there, right, with Dooku and Maul, they have their own schemes and machinations running, right? That aren't necessarily...
That's Palpatine's fault. That is Palpatine's fault, because Palpatine is the first Sith who breaks the rule of two.
Oh, okay.
Palpatine has, before he even overthrew Plagueis, which was his master...
Right.
I think he had Maul first, but I could be wrong. You could write in if you know. He had one of them first. He had basically an apprentice that he wasn't calling an apprentice.
Okay.
And then he overthrew his master, had Dooku as his apprentice, but still kept Maul on the side. Mm-hmm. And was like, yeah, you're my apprentice, kind of. So he broke the rule of two first. Dooku has Ventress. Dooku has Savage Opress. Dooku, in one of the books, has Quinlan Vos for a time. So it's... And Grievous, too. Like, Dooku's got everybody. He's got a full team.
Wow. Okay.
Once Palpatine opened the door to having more Sith apprentices, things just happen. You have Vader and his Inquisitors. Everything's out the window once Palpatine sort of breaks the chain. But before him, this was a very strictly adhered to rule, which is how they were able to operate in the shadows for so long.
And not only operate in the shadows, but actually control. The fact is, if you're going for a dark side, right, you're going to have some, the master is going to try to, or the apprentice is going to try to overthrow the master. And you have your own hunger and ego that you're trying to play.
And that's the point. You get the strongest people. This is their philosophy. I'm not advocating for you to have the rule of two. This is their philosophy, is because the apprentice has to rise up and defeat the master, you will always have the two strongest Sith possible.
Right.
Because there cannot be a weak person just sitting there and biding their time.
They're locked in this dynamic tension, and they're keeping each other in check in a way. And then that makes them ultimately more effective, I guess.
Yes. A lot more ruthless.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's tough. Read the Darth Bane books if you really want to learn more about the rule of two. They're really good. They're really, really, really good.
Cool.
Yeah. So Dooku rather Christopher Lee as Dooku, really excellent. It's a shame we lost him because I'd love to see him in more films, but probably one of the most interesting characters in the whole Star Wars universe. This person who used to be a Jedi, was disillusioned with what they've become, decided better to join the Sith and try to establish order by being more centralized in power, I guess.
Yeah, right. Now, I'm famously on record for not liking the curved lightsaber blade handles, but I guess apparently that's a thing that
everybody
Christopher
loves
Lee.
It.
Okay, yeah. That's just
it.
Me. I'm just weird.
That, I'm going to blame you on that one.
Okay. Yeah, well, blame. There's nothing to blame.
No, there's just blame.
There's a fault. There's a fault.
I've decided.
There's a fault in my stars.
Now. Yeah. All right. Last point. Anakin and Padme find their way to a droid factory on Geonosis where C-3PO's head is installed on a battle droid and the couple is captured. Dooku brings Anakin, Padme, and Obi-Wan to a coliseum and sentences the three to death just in time for the Jedi to arrive with their newly minted clone army. Mace Windu beheads Jango Fett before Anakin and Obi-Wan fight Count Dooku, leading to Obi-Wan's incapacitation and Anakin's loss of a hand. Yoda meets Dooku, but Dooku threatens Obi-Wan and Anakin and makes an escape. Dooku delivers the plans to the Death Star to Sidious, and Anakin receives a robotic arm. Anakin and Padme are married in a secret wedding on Naboo. I know I put a lot here, but it's mostly garbage. So
it is, again, in a movie that's already packed, this just packs it in even more.
Yeah.
And we establish all of the clone army technology and operations and control. Mm-hmm. And
begin
and
the Clone Wars have.
Yes. All the ships and walkers and everything. And it's all with this, oh, hey, the Jedi are being rounded up and about to be slaughtered. But here comes the clone army. Yay.
You know what? I will say Geonosis has become sort of an iconic battle in the whole Clone Wars era. And it's revisited a couple times during the Clone Wars cartoon. And they even go one more time in Rebels. I don't know if you got to that, but they do go to Geonosis once in Rebels.
Okay.
Where they meet Saw Gerrera there. So
there's
a lot going on there. A lot going on there. Saw, by the way, has a big origin story within the Clone Wars, too.
Okay.
With his sister, how he lost his sister. And it's very sad, actually. You kind of see how Saw got a little the way he is.
Right.
But as far as Geonosis itself, what do you think of the battle?
The battle, I don't know. It seemed a little foolish on the part of the Jedi to just sort of show up here and think that with a few lightsabers they were going to, you know, take on a whole planet, so to speak.
Yep.
They kind of got their butts handed to them, if I'm remembering right.
They did. And then Yoda's like, don't worry about it, guys. I got all these guys. Just put them in the way of
the bullets. It's cool. So again, I don't have a great estimation of the Jedi Council.
No, I don't think anyone does. I don't even think the Jedi Council does by the end.
Yeah. Yeah. So, then we have the whole, Coliseum scene where they're staked out and
didn't love that.
Yeah. Shoot them or something. Oh boy. That was also pretty cringy.
Yeah. There's a lot of cringe in this part.
Yeah.
All right. One thing that I will really complain about. I know I don't always agree with you on the whole, stop bringing up 77. People like the nostalgia, but this one did kind of bother me. We need to have Anakin lose a hand the same way Luke did.
Right,
and then receive a robotic hand. Why did you need that? He's going to lose his arms and legs anyway.
Right. Just, he's going to get burned apart.
Why did you need that? It just felt like, hey, remember? Remember when Luke lost his hand? Mm-hmm. They're the same.
Yeah. It just again, needless stuff. Just you're just doing harm to your own storyline. So
Right. Yeah. Did you like that they seeded the Death Star here?
Yeah, I noticed that when we were doing our live watch of this. I was like, oh, the Death Star, look, it's there. Yeah. So that it goes back, the plans for it that go back this far, that was cool.
David, last thing before we go to feedback, Anakin's wedding with Padme. Did you like this? Because I actually kind of liked this scene. It was actually a nice shot.
In the totality of the movie, it for me, it just washed away. I'm trying to remember, you know, that they did that. And it's just so many details were thrown at me in this movie. And then you get this, oh, yeah. They're getting married? Oh.
Right.
Okay, what does that mean? And then, da-da-da, you know, and it's over.
All right, David, time for listener feedback. Let's quickly go through it. We've got just a couple pieces. We've got E. Hoop writing in. He says, I'm interested if you have thoughts on this topic. What are the two words placed adjacent one another in Star Wars? The worst two words placed adjacent one another in Star Wars history. I humbly submit that we have them in Attack of the Clones, Jedi Business. Enjoyed the Phantom Menace pod, blew my mind when you compared Obi-Wan's pacing to Maul's prowling versus Qui-Gon's focus meditation.
Mm-hmm.
I really appreciate some of the cinema callbacks in episodes 1 and 2, the pod race scene to the classic Ben-Hur chariot race, and the arena scene monsters to classic Harryhausen. I don't recall any such specifics in Revenge of the Sith. I'll be following this series. E. Hoop wrote in again and said, okay, I have to add one of my favorite spoiler memories from Attack of the Clones. I mostly have been avoiding press and trailers for things like Star Wars and the MCU since around the time of The Phantom Menace. I'd seen one in a magazine from the arena scene where I could see something like 15 lightsabers in a single shot, which was pretty serious nerd candy. In episode 1, I knew Maul was going to flip out his Swiss Army double lightsaber, so that lost a little awesome, but I still love his fights. But in Attack of the Clones, I had no idea the clone army was coming in for the Republic. So when the ships came in under Yoda's command, and he said, around the survivors, a perimeter create, I almost melted. One of the greatest plot twists ever. We're over here complaining about the Coliseum scene, and E-Hoop's having a great time.
Yes, he's enjoying it. I do love the call outs to classic cinema. So if you've seen some of those movies and call back, those are great polls to have. And they do stand some test, and are useful tropes in that regard. I think though when you pack in, at least with Attack of the Clones, so much into this movie. This is maybe two and a half movies packed into one movie. It gets a little lost. The nuance you could play with, the fun you could have with it, gets a little lost.
Absolutely. Thanks, E-Hoop. Last one is Sarah, who wrote in, so I have been listening to all of the Star Wars podcasts, which are amazing. Thanks, Sarah. I've noticed that I'm slowly not understanding all the lingo and themes that are coming up in the discussions. I'm trying to keep up with all the shows. I finished Bad Batch and Visions.
Oh,
I will
good.
Start Clone Wars soon. I just wonder, and here's my ask, could you do an overarching pod about the themes and big picture conflicts that permeate through it all, movies and or an animation? I am such a big motion picture, big picture person that I think I am now officially entering a land where I don't quite get all the foreign language. I hate it. I am a Gen Xer and I have a deep love for the franchise. Thanks for all you do. You're amazing. David, are we going to do a Star Wars Bible? I feel like we've heard an idea of this, but it wasn't from us.
Interesting. It'd be interesting to do that if we took apart some major themes.
Yeah.
This almost feels too like a conversation that we would have to have with a few other people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we could, but if we could pull back on some of the themes, all the Jedi, samurai type of things, attachment, love, anger,
yep.
Sith, there could only be two. There's a lot of really good stuff.
Right.
Politics.
Hyperspace, even. BBY. Yes. Here's your education for the night, Sarah. BBY means Before the Battle of Yavin, which is A New Hope. That's the battle where the Death Star is blown up the first time.
Right. That's reset your clock then.
Yeah. So, so. It's like BC AD, you know, or BCE CE. So right. It's before the Battle of Yavin. So we're 22 years before A New Hope right now in this movie.
You know, in the it does get in this constructed universe, not unlike other deep universes that we've covered in the past. The deeper fandoms get very nerdy into this, and the details can get quite a lot. I was just trying to learn a little bit more about Maul and where he comes from and his people. And I know there's
very
some more
cool stuff.
Yeah. And then I'm just starting to realize, whoa, like, how did I get here? You know, this is, you can just go on in these infinite directions of things. So,
yeah.
But I do think from a, I guess from a literary standpoint, if we were able to pull back and pull up a little bit and give some umbrella, conversation that what is this Skywalker saga?
Right.
What are some of these issues around cloning versus robotics? Yeah, there is a lot being said here. So
yeah.
I think we'll have to ruminate on that, but I think there's some possibility.
Yeah, good idea, Sarah. Appreciate it.
And I'm sure we have some friends out, some of our Lorehound friends who would be more than happy to talk to nerd out with some of this stuff.
You know?
We do. Are we the Fast X of podcasting now?
What is that?
Fast, you know, the Fast and Furious.
Okay. I thought Elon Musk.
That was the last movie. I meant to say the Fast and Furious, because, you know, family's everything with the Fast and Furious.
All right. Well, that's that for this month of the Star Wars Film Fest. We hope you enjoyed Attack of the Clones. And of course, we will be back next month. Which actually is this month, because this is now coming out at the very beginning of August. We'll be back with a live watch of Revenge of the Sith and then a podcast on it as well. So hope you can join us for that. Every episode, we like to thank our Patreon subscribers, but especially our lore masters, our top tier patrons. You really help us keep everything running. You help us support our affiliates. You help us keep expanding to new shows, maybe too many shows, but you tell us. And, every episode, we give a shout out to those lore masters, and they are Samartian, Cyrus, Mark H., Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Lavinia T., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andra B., Kwang Yu, Laura G., and Dead Eye Jedi Bob. Thank you all so much for being Patreon subscribers. Again, really helps us keep things moving, like the Star Wars Film Fest, like more Star Wars projects like Ahsoka, and the prep podcast we're going to be doing for that. We're doing two episodes coming out over the next few weeks that will cover her journey in the Clone Wars and then her journey through Star Wars Rebels, the series that came out on Disney. I also want to give a big shout out to our affiliates. Wool Shift Dust is one of them. That's hosted by Alicia. She covered the Silo TV series on Apple TV. Now she's doing a book club on her Patreon, where you pay per episode and you join in on the fun for her to read the books that the show is based on. I know she's also going to be covering Dune coming up, so stay subscribed to her public feed, even if you're not doing the book club. Also, Properly Howard Film Reviews, hosted by Maester Anthony and Steve, is coming back really soon. They're starting with three episodes in August. White Men Can't Jump. Dune, which has David and I,
RoboCop,
and Alicia.
You got
on
plenty
it.
Of stuff
and,
coming.
The theme is even remakes, and they are having a blast with it. Steve is hilarious. Anthony and him just play off each other. So definitely subscribe to their feed if you have not. And of course, stay up to date on our Twitter or our Discord if you want more updates about that. Then, outside of Star Wars, we're currently covering Foundation Weekly. We've got screeners, so those episodes are coming out the day after it airs. That's when the embargo lifts, so we are releasing them just after the embargo lift. We are also going to be covering The Wheel of Time in September, as far as regular coverage goes, and possibly one over the other show, but we will keep you posted on that. As far as our monthly podcast, we just released Silmarillion Stories with Marilyn Arpukila, and also with Marilyn Arpukila. an episode of the Earthsea Cycle, which is covering the second part of The Farthest Shore. Don't forget that we will be skipping a month of the Earthsea Cycle in August just because we have some vacations going on. We've got three shows we're starting, so very busy time for the Lorehounds, but you can still expect a ton of coverage. Of course, we'll have a new Lorehounds Play episode this month covering Skyrim, the classic 2011 game that I think changed a lot of lives, changed a lot of hearts and minds of gamers. So Brennan and I will be back for that. Moses and I will be back with a One Piece episode. So there will be plenty of things coming to your ears. Hope you enjoyed. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we will see you next month.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds and connect with us on Twitter at @thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Mark, I was listening to Paramore the other day, and it really made me think about the amygdala and the limbic system.
You just made those words up, didn't you?
What, Paramore?
We're the Nevermind the Music podcast, where one musician
and one psychologist
talk songwriting and the mind, one song at a time.
We'll hear everything from Green Day and Outkast
to Stevie Wonder and Dua Lipa.
And we mostly try to stay on topic.
Except for when we don't want to.
Nevermind the Music, wherever you get your podcasts.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.